Hello friends, and welcome to the very first episode of Witchcraft for the Restless. Hello everyone, my name is Kai, and this is the very first episode of this podcast, where we'll talk about witchcraft-related things, intersectional feminism, and some stuff unrelated to either of those. This episode will mostly be an introduction to me and my craft, and we'll have a little bit of a chat about tradition and ritual, and how it's not really present in our lives anymore. I wanted to do a podcast for a while now, but I haven't really had the courage. Speaking is not my strong suit, and I am much more eloquent in writing, hence why I have a blog. And most of you are probably coming here through my blog, so thank you so much. My blog is at The Restless Witch on Tumblr, and I want to thank all of my followers there. There's a lot of you, and it blows my mind every time I look at it, but there's almost 17,000 of you, and I love you all so much, so thank you so much for the support, and I hope that you like this podcast as much as you seem to like my blog. On this podcast, I try to approach topics from a place of curiosity, where we can learn together, rather than coming at it from a place of authority. I don't really claim to be an expert on any of the topics that I discuss on here, but I definitely try to spread accurate information and really, really try to be as intersectional as possible. Intersectional feminism is really important to me, so please feel free to call me out, gently, hopefully. If I ever say anything insensitive or incorrect, definitely call me out for that. Everyone has a place in witchcraft, and everyone has a right to feel safe here. And feeling safe here includes feeling safe enough to call me out, please. And like I said, this episode will mostly be an introduction to me and my craft. So let's get on to talking about myself. My name is Kai. I'm 28, and I'll take a page out of the Serpent Cast's book here and answer their introductory question. My Hogwarts house is Ravenclaw with some Hufflepuff tendencies here and there. And my signs are, I'm a Pisces sun, Cancer moon, and Virgo rising. I actually used to think that astrology was complete BS. I just thought that horoscopes were ridiculous and silly, and how could your, placement of your planets at birth affect anything? But the more I learned about it, the more it made sense to me, and like I'm fully embracing it now. And I might even one day have a little astrology segment on here. But for now, I'll take you through how I currently practice and some of my history, like how I got to this point. I've been interested in the occult and mythology and magic and nature and all that good stuff basically since I can remember. I have a distinct memory of ordering mythological creature books and magic-based fantasy novels from the Scholastic book fairs that would come around to your elementary school. And literature was actually a big gateway for me, and being able to choose the books that I personally wanted to read and not necessarily what my parents wanted me to read was really important for my witchy development. Before that, though, I was introduced to the concept of animism by Pocahontas, the Disney movie, which I fully understand is not accurate in the slightest, but the every rock and tree and creature having a life, a spirit, and a name that really resonated with me. And I guess it was really important and formative because I was, four when that movie first came out, and it really stuck with me. And it's really still kind of that concept is a big part of my life. Yeah, that movie was really validating for me, I guess, because before it even came out, I really felt the concept of animism. Like, I felt it, I just didn't have, any validation for it or a name for it or anything. And I guess I just felt more validated in my, really deep connection to nature. I was such a nature kid that I would be organizing my National Geographic animal info cards by class, order, family, genus, and species and such, literally as soon as I learned how to read. And I was definitely one of those kids that made potions, air quotes, out of, mud and sticks and leaves and rocks and all those magical things. And I got in real trouble once. I'm sorry, Mom, for eating a mushroom, just a random mushroom that I found on the ground, because I was trying a bunch of different plants to see what was magical and medicinal and edible and stuff, and I thought it was a good idea at the time. But, come on, I was only five, and I was fine. My mom was really, really panicked, but it turned out okay, and it just made me a better witch. And I was so, so into animals. Like, at this point, I didn't really care about plants as much, but I was so into animals and learning about them that when we were going around the kindergarten classroom saying something for every letter of the alphabet, I said tapir for the letter T, like the animal tapir. And I got in trouble because my kindergarten teacher thought that I was making it up. So yeah, I'm definitely a Ravenclaw because I know I love that learning. I love to learn new stuff. And I kind of would be a perpetual student if I could be. And I guess that's kind of, it's kind of what I'm doing because witchcraft really is, it's always constantly evolving and you're always learning new stuff and there's never, you know, there's never really a plateau. There's always some climbing to do. And my family really always encouraged my unending curiosity and they really indulged it, which was really nice. Thank you, family. But they definitely saw any interest in the occult or, you know, other spiritualities as sort of a fun pop culture thing and not so much a serious option for my spirituality. I was raised Christian. My mom was also involved in Ekankar, which is, you know what? Honestly, I don't know that much about Ekankar. I'm sorry, Mom, I really should know more. But I know it's a spirituality that has one living master. So it's as if their idea of deity inhabits one living master at a time. And after they pass, they become ascended and, you know, a new master is brought into the world. But yeah, that's all I really know about Ekankar. But the rest of my childhood was very Christian. My dad played the organ and my mom was in the choir, so we were quite involved with the church and its community. Every Sunday was a church day, and I was involved with the church's youth group, which was actually pretty fun. But I definitely considered myself an atheist during this whole time. I didn't believe in God or a deity. I thought that the idea of spirituality was just, like, psychologically good for some people, and that deity wasn't a thing. And I went there from around age 10, I think, until I left for university. So while I was, like, involved in the church, I was still considering myself atheist. And my interest for the witchy stuff basically took the form of witchy aesthetic and like a deep interest in other cultures and not exactly studying witchcraft. Oh gosh, and during that time I was probably definitely accidentally appropriative. And like looking back on some of the things that I was interested in and that I was doing because of my interest in other cultures, I cringe at myself. Thank goodness I got past that appropriative point in my life. But yeah, none of my friends were witchy or anything. I had one friend who said that her aunts were Wiccan, and I thought that was like the super coolest thing in the world. But mostly, high school was full of a deep love of Tim Burton and Tim Burton aesthetics, trip hop, and probably other music you haven't heard of, because I was one of those kids. Rent, the musical, was a big deal to me in high school. It was the birth of my anxiety and depression. Lovely. And it was lots of learning about myself, of course, and my needs and how to be a close friend. I had really awesome close friends in high school. And then after high school, I went to University of Guelph for a year of studio art. And that's where I met my partner, Chris, who I'm still with. So that was 9 years ago, 9 and a half. And then I did a year and a half of photography at Niagara College, and now I'm currently studying herbal medicine in hopes of one day having my own healing practice slash witchy shop one day, maybe. Basically, I just want to be an old-timey healer professional witch person for a living. That would be fantastic. And I definitely would count podcasting as part of that profession. So if you want to support me and make this dream a reality, head on over to my Patreon page, which I'll link in the show notes. But anyways, yeah, my herbalism course is a correspondence course, so it's a study-at-your-own-pace type thing, which means it is going slower than I would have hoped. I am a procrastinator, to say the least. It's going slower than I would have originally hoped, but that is completely fine with me because at least it's still an interest that I'm holding over the course of, it's been like 4 or 5 years now, which is rare for me. My interests tend to come and go in rather short waves, which isn't great for consistency of anything. Hence why I'm the restless witch. My interests really tend to hop around in seemingly disparate directions, which it can be frustrating, but is also really fun and keeps it interesting. I suppose the upside is that I'm like a jack of many trades, and I do have lots of different hobbies that I tend to hop between every few weeks. Some of the hobbies that have like kind of stuck around and, you know, make their way through the cycles every once in a while are crocheting, I draw, I paint, I write, jewelry making, and lots of other creative type things. And I also tend to get hyper-focused on learning about different things. So I went through a phase of learning about herbalism, of course. I was learning about cannabis and its medicinal, technical whatnots for a bit. Gardening is for sure one of my hyper-focused things of the past. And animals and plants. And I think I might be starting to hyper-focus on astrology. And with my hyper-focus on animals, there was a lot of animal and, like, pet care. So dog and cat behavior and nutrition and rabbit care and behavior. Oh, folklore for sure. Witchcraft was definitely a hyper-focus. Music, permaculture. Man, my interests are so varied. So I end up with just this vast collection of useless knowledge, which, you know, isn't really useful to me, but at least I know some stuff. And at least I am still interested and, like, excited about learning about stuff. Gotta look on the bright side, kids. But also, feel free to send in asks and questions about any of those topics as well, because I still love answering questions and talking about them, and I still really love all those topics. It's just that I'm not hyper-focused on them at the current moment. But this is meant to be a witchcraft podcast, so back to the witchy realm of my life. About 3 years ago, after being hyper-focused on learning about witchcraft for a few months, like, that was really, you know. And when I say hyper-focused, I don't mean just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna casually read about this stuff. When I got hyper-focused, it's all I can think about or talk about, or it's all I want to read about for hours and hours a day. So after being hyper-focused on witchcraft for a while, I had one of those moments where I had been thinking, gosh, I'd love to be a witch. And then my brain just went, but you can be one. You can. Like, all you have to do is do the stuff. And so thus my journey to being a witch started. And that's when I started calling myself a witch and being comfortable identifying with that title. It's kind of a weird sensation practicing and actually doing the things that you've been learning about for literally your whole life. And it's kind of great. It kind of brought me back to my childhood where I was just like making these potions in the garden. And really any time that I do anything witchcraft related, it just definitely makes my inner child so happy. So dang happy. Little Kai would be, you know, beaming. I'll probably talk more about the journey on my path from like that day 3 years ago until now in some other podcasts. But right now, currently, I am a secular green witch, a tarot reader, sigil crafter, and my practice is consistent and it's something that I'm really comfortable in now. So now that you've heard my entire life story, let's chat a little bit about tradition and ritual. I didn't write any notes or script for this part of the chat, so we'll see how this goes. My theory is kind of that tradition and ritual are so ingrained in the human psyche and like our collective consciousness that when it's not present in your life at all, it can kind of lend to some anxiety and depression. Every culture and basically every generation up until maybe baby boomers was heavily ritualized. Ritual was and is a big part of every religion, basically. Every belief system has its tradition and ritual. And I don't think that's an accident. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that we as humans need some traditions and ritual. I think it's just an inherent requirement for our souls and our psyches to feel balanced. I find that traditions and rituals can help us feel like we're home, even when we're not, or maybe when we've been feeling lost or directionless. It's kind of a way for our brains to make something or maybe a situation that isn't familiar to make it familiar. So say you had a Christmas tradition growing up. Maybe it wasn't very important to you as a kid, but you had the tradition and your family did this one thing every year. Say maybe it was going out and getting the tree at a certain place. Then you grow up and move away and you stop doing that tradition. It really makes your new environment seem that much less like home to me. And while I was growing up, I liked the traditions and I liked the sort of mini rituals that I had, but they weren't very important to me. Like, I didn't think that I would keep up doing those same exact things every year. But when I did move out, I found that it was really making me feel more lonely, kind of, I guess. Not really homesick, but it was just making whatever place I was in feel even more alien and less familiar. And even if you didn't really have traditions growing up, or if they weren't important to your family, I feel like not having traditions and rituals can still make you feel lost and sort of less at home in your space. I also feel like bringing in a new ritual for yourself can be a great way to recenter and rebalance. So if you are feeling a bit unstable at the moment or just sort of lost and wandering around, maybe bring some tradition and ritual into your life. And of course, magic doesn't have to be ritualized. Like, kids do magic all the time without ritual, and it can be some of the most potent stuff. But since ritual is so ingrained into our human bodies and our human, you know, collective consciousness, that often adults, especially those who are new to magic, they kind of need those rituals and rules and structure in order to feel free enough to actually feel the magic. I was recently listening to Tarot for the Wild Soul episode 60, where Lindsay Mack and her guest talked about embodying the Three of Cups. And they talked about how when in groups, like when we're doing group work or group talks, we need rules and structure in order to feel safe and free to share in those groups. And I think that those same things can apply to our own personal practice, even if it's solitary. I think that some people, or I think a lot of people, need rules and structure in order to feel free enough to let go far enough that we can actually connect more easily and deeply with magic. Without those rules and structures, I think that our brains are trying to think about too many things at once, I think that we're more anxious when we don't have a set direction and set steps and things to do. So it can lead to a less spiritual experience when you're trying to sort of make things up as you go. This isn't always the case. Of course, some people feel they're most connected outside of ritual. But I think for most, especially adults who are new to it, they need that ritual and they need the predictability of it in order to feel like safe enough to let themselves go for X amount of time until the next step comes. Because the steps are already in place, they don't have to think about it, they don't have to think about what's coming next, they can just fully let go. So in that sense, ritual can be really freeing, even though it is added structure.
Sorry if the audio changes now. I'm editing this and I just realized that I never defined tradition and ritual. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary says that tradition is an inherited, established, or customary pattern of thought, action, or behavior, such as religious practice or social custom. And it defines ritual as the established form for a ceremony, a ceremonial act or action, and an act or series of acts regularly repeated in a set and precise manner. So each step is predetermined and has purpose and significance.
So you could have a tradition of doing a certain ritual every Samhain, say, for example. Traditions are some of my favorite things. Ritual is a little bit harder for me personally, but I do love me a tradition. Most of my family traditions center around holidays, as I feel like most families do. We had a lot of traditions around Christmas. My dad makes his family's fruitcake recipe every year, and I know we don't always eat it, and I know I used to hate fruitcake, but I promise we appreciate it. I don't think he made one this year, and like I've, even though it's not my favorite dessert or favorite thing to eat, I missed its presence, and I was like, oh, but it's a tradition, and I felt it missing. It was a very strange thing, because I don't even like it, usually. Another tradition we have is always cutting down our own Christmas tree. We've never bought a pre-cut tree or used a fake tree, and I don't think I ever will, because it's just something that's so lovely. And my sister and I would have a deal where we wouldn't look at the Christmas tree until after we opened stockings, which was difficult because we had to pass our Christmas tree in order to get to the stockings. And I have no clue where this started or who started it, but I'm pretty sure that it's not like a normal tradition or like folk belief. But yeah, I have no clue who started it, but we weren't allowed to look at the tree until after we did stockings. A really fun tradition is that my parents would make scavenger hunts for me and my sister on, I feel like it was usually Easter because it was nice enough out to go outside and do a scavenger hunt. And it's still sort of a family tradition because this past Christmas, my dad had us go on a scavenger hunt, but instead of just around the backyard, it was throughout our whole town. It was pretty fun. My family and I used to always go to the Christmas Eve church service, of course, because, you know, we were churchgoers. After me and my sister left for university, my parents sort of stopped going to church as regularly or as much. And for the past few years, we haven't gone to the Christmas Eve church service. And while I don't love Christmas Eve's church service because I'm not Christian, I was missing just having the tradition of going and doing some sort of spiritual work on Christmas Eve. I was missing that aspect. So this past Christmas, I introduced my family to a solstice fire, which was really fun. It was really quite nice and beautiful, and everyone had a good time, I think. Really, it was just we had a little bit of a campfire in the backyard, and I made a spiral of evergreen branches. Because while I celebrate Yule on my own, on the solstice, I was just missing a little bit of that spiritual side to Christmas Eve. And as for rituals, I don't really think that my family had any that we did, like, all together. Aside from church, of course, but that wasn't really my family's ritual, it was the church's ritual. But I always had my own little rituals, and I actually didn't even think about it till just now, but I used to cleanse myself before every holiday, like every day that was important to me. This was, of course, well before I identified as a witch. This is, I guess, my whole life till now. I've been doing this as long as I can remember, but the day before a day that's important to me, say like Christmas or Halloween or my birthday or something, I always have a full shower, like a really long, intense scrubbing, scrub everything until it's raw sort of shower. And I never really thought about why I felt a need to do this, because I've done this literally for years. And I never really thought about where my need to do this comes from, because I do kind of feel it as a need. If I don't do that, I feel icky and just like heavy and dirty on the important day if I don't do this shower ritual. But maybe it is because I didn't really have any rituals when it comes to, you know, those days. Of course, we had traditions, but there was no time set aside for, like, my personal spiritual rituals, which I also didn't think I needed at the time. Silly me. But other than that shower ritual, I didn't really have any personal rituals in my life, at least not in my daily life at that time. But now I actually feel like I have a good amount, like a good healthy helping of ritual in my everyday life. And it really does feel quite nice and familiar and kind of like home. Some of my rituals aren't daily things, but they are things that I do, you know, say every time I read tarot or every time I make tea. It may not be daily, but it is consistent. So let me talk to you a little bit about the traditions and rituals that I have currently. Those Christmas traditions that me and my family had growing up still hold true. Those are still happening. And that cleansing shower ritual is still a thing I do before every important day. But some other ones that I've picked up over the years, every first snowfall of the year, I collect some snow and save it in a mason jar, and I stick it in the freezer and label it with the date and the moon phase and some other astrological stuff. And I save it for spells and for posterity. And I'm actually not really sure all the reasons why I save it, but I do like to collect the first snow of every year. Having a solstice fire every summer and winter solstice will hopefully be a tradition that I am able to stick to. I've done it for the past 2 years, but who knows if I'll have access to fire pits from year to year, so it might be something that I'll have to turn into a smaller, maybe candle ritual. But I really hope that the campfires and bonfires are something I can keep up for the solstices. Is solstices even the correct plural form of solstice? It just sounds really silly to me. Anyways, every year on Imolg, I make bridges crosses. I have a tutorial on my blog, and I'll link that in the show description. I love making these so much, and it just makes me feel all warm and cozy, and it has ever since I first started practicing. The first thing that I ever really did as a witch was to celebrate Imolg, and I made these on that day, and so it kind of welcomed me into the practice, into the craft, and I don't know, it really felt correct, and it felt right, and so it's something that I do every Imolg since then. I'll make new ones every year and kind of change the ones out that I have hanging around my home. And even though I don't explicitly work with Bridget, I think that I might try getting better in touch with her because, I mean, she's been there since the beginning, present in my craft, even though I wasn't actively working with any deities, and I'm still not actively working with any deities right now. And back onto the subject of traditions, not all traditions are yearly. Growing up until like just a few years ago, we would go visit my family on the West Coast every 2 years. And that was definitely a tradition. So tradition doesn't have to be every single year. And when we stopped going out west as frequently, I really feel that loss. And it's not just because I miss my West Coast family. It feels weird not hopping on a plane and going somewhere every 2 years. It just sort of feels like that bit is missing from my life, and it doesn't really feel like time passes properly when that tradition doesn't get done. So I really want to get back into that tradition if I can ever financially afford it. And as for rituals that I still hold, every time that I read the tarot, I have a ritual that I go through that involves knocking on the deck, sort of greeting the deck, and then I have a certain way that I shuffle. And so those steps are the same every time, and it gets me centered and gets me sort of into the headspace of reading the tarot. It sort of feels like muscle memory. Like if I were to try to do a reading without that ritual, I don't think my brain would be ready. It'd kind of be like catching it off guard. But doing that ritual, my brain sort of prepares itself and is like, oh yes, this familiar thing. Let's get into that zone. So not only is the ritual centering myself sort of spiritually, it's prepping my brain and getting myself into the right headspace mentally. Another ritual that I have is every time I make tea. I love tea so much, and I think my deep love of tea is part of what got me into herbal medicine, because if you can drink tea as medicine, even if it doesn't taste good, I am down for that. So for the past while, I've been choosing my teas based on the magical correspondences and what I needed that day. Or I've been putting together my own blends with that reasoning and thought process in mind. And I've been consciously putting those correspondences and intents into my tea as I'm making it. And I'd have the same steps that I go through in making it every time. Same with coffee. I have the same sort of process of steps that I go through. And I've given it the same sort of importance and feel as my ritual to get into the headspace for tarot. I kind of use that time spent making my drink as a calm space, a way to recenter and ground myself. And yeah, that ritual has been really nice for me. And of course, I get to do it a lot because I love some tea and some coffee. I also used to have a sleep time ritual, and I guess I still kind of do have the same ritual. When I started doing this, I didn't see it as a ritual at all. I just thought it was a thing to help me sleep. And it involves going to get a drink of ice cold water, like a nice tall glass of ice cold water, and then putting on the old Disney version of Alice in Wonderland. I would do that every night, and for some reason, that movie just worked to help me sleep. I guess I was using it as a meditation. I would close my eyes and I would just visualize the movie and visualize myself in the movie. And it sort of just helped me transition into sleep, because visualizing this movie and visualizing myself in it, it was already dreamlike visuals that I was seeing. So I think that really smooths the transition from waking thoughts to sleep dreaming thoughts. And eventually it got to the point where even just listening to that movie or seeing that movie, I cannot stay awake during it. My brain got so used to just turning off maybe 10 minutes into it that it just, if I want to sleep in the middle of the day, all I have to do is put on that movie, which is a little bit unfortunate because it's one of my favorite. But yeah, ritual can be a really powerful thing. And while I think tradition and ritual are really important for basically all humans, it really doesn't come naturally to some people, and that is perfectly okay. It just means that you might have to build your ritual into something you already really love. Like for me, this is getting a hot drink. So whether it's tea or coffee, or if I buy it or make it, I always have a hot drink at least once a day. So this is a good spot for me to inject some ritual into my life. And there's so many things that you could do to make a hot drink into a ritual. If you work with sigils, you could trace or write a sigil on your cup and consciously put that intent into your drink and make the whole thing sort of a visualization journey of putting the intent from the sigil into your drink and then consequently drinking said drink and having it flow throughout your body. That can be a really great visualization and energy work practice and exercise. If you commute to work every day, you can make some ritual in there. Even if it's as simple as, say, if you work with any deities, you could say a prayer for safe travels, or you could make a point of bringing a specific stone with you to kind of help you through your day. It can also be simply as mundane as always stopping for coffee at the same spot and doing that mindfully and consciously. Ritual can be the most mundane or the most elaborate thing, but I think even just the presence of having a ritual, I think that really does keep us grounded and make us feel safe and at home. So I encourage everyone who doesn't feel like they have enough tradition and ritual in their lives to go out and make some. I also really love hearing about other people's traditions, so please tell me all about your strange family traditions or folk beliefs or really anything of that ilk. I love hearing about that stuff. Please tell me about it. On the topic of community and the Restless Witch community, let's take a question from Tumblr. I do want to have a catchy, fun segment name for this, but I don't yet, so we're just going to call it Restless Witches Community. Anonymous asked, what's the connection to the energies you work with feel like to you? This is actually a really interesting question. What do energies feel like to me? I'm a very visual person. So a lot of when I work with energies, it's just a lot of visualization. And it's hard to explain how I feel when it goes from just me visualizing to me manifesting the energy. Usually, it feels like warmth in the palm of my hands. And that's kind of how I know the transition from just visualization to manifestation has happened. And I typically direct energy with my hands, so it makes sense that the warmth is in the palms of my hands. It generally doesn't extend to my fingers. Usually my fingers actually feel pretty cold when I'm doing energy work, and the palms of my hands feel warm. And as for what it looks like to me, it is a ball of light, as most energy working sort of meditations will tell you to visualize. It has a viscosity to it, though. It sort of feels like if you had warm slime in an anti-gravity environment. So, like, if you had warm honey that wasn't sticky, that's the texture of most energy that I work with. It does look like a ball of light, but it sort of, you know, sponge sugar? So, like, on Great British Bake Off, whenever they have their sponge sugar challenge, and, like, those little sponge sugar nests that they make, how it's sort of wispy and round and sort of wispy and round. That's sort of what it looks like, only those little energy strands, those little threads of energy, those little strands are moving and they're light and they're energy. And yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. So if you had your ball of light, but it also was made of sponge sugar and it was a texture of honey, and that's just what like neutral, conjuring up neutral energy feels like to me. And then, of course, it will take on different visualizations and feels depending on what I'm putting it into, what my intent is it for it, you know, all that good stuff, the type of energy that it is. And now it's time for podcast community, our next recurring segment. I'm definitely going to have snappier segment names in the future, that's for sure. But for now, it's called podcast community, what I've been listening to this week. I've been in love with Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. This podcast, it just hits me right in the feels. Harry Potter is really important to me and my life, and it just was really formative for me. And this podcast, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, they read Harry Potter chapter by chapter. Each episode is a chapter. They read it through a theme, and they read it as if it was a sacred text. So they take Harry Potter, which is, to me, it is a sacred text. Like, it feels that important to me. And they sort of look at it allegorically, and they have different sacred reading practices that they go through. Anyways, it is a fantastic, fantastic podcast. And even though I'm only on book two with them, I am way behind and catching up. It's so lovely. So if you like Harry Potter and you like looking at things through different lenses and different world views, definitely give that a listen. I listen to a lot of podcasts every week, like a lot. So I'm not going to say every episode that I listened to this week, but one that really stuck out to me was one that I've already mentioned, which is episode 60 from Tarot for the Wild Soul with Lindsay Mack, Embodying the Three of Cups with Stacey Ivory. I love Tarot for the Wild Soul. It's a fantastic podcast, and this episode was so lovely. The Three of Cups, to me, it talks about significant friends and close relationships and honoring those relationships and spending time, like actual quality time, cultivating those relationships. And so this episode with Stacey, she really is fantastic at cultivating safe spaces and doing group work and really making those spaces sacred and making sure that everyone in that group is getting what they need out of that group session. And it just reminded me how important community and closeness is, and it's something that's a little bit lacking in my life right now. I don't really have close friendships except for with my partner, and it was kind of just like a reminder to me that I need to foster some relationships. Like, I need to honor the closeness that I do have and, you know, foster some maybe new close friendships. Who knows? But it was just a great reminder to me, and it's such a fantastic episode and a great podcast, so go listen to it if you don't already. I also listened to The Fat Feminist Witch this week, episode 43, interview with Mallory Kirsten, the Joy Goddess. And this is another of my very favorite podcasts. Paige, the Fat Feminist Witch, is so fantastic and a fellow Ontarian, which is a bonus. This episode was mainly focused on the Akashic Records and not really how to access them, but sort of the importance of doing so. And it really got me more interested in the Akashic Records because I'd heard of them and I sort of didn't really think about them as anything other than a way to access past lives, which I'm not super interested in at the moment. But the way that Mallory was talking about them really made me intrigued, and it really felt, I don't know, important. And so the Akashic Records is something that I might look further into, and something that, has really started to interest me along with astrology. This week I also listened to the Serpent Cast. I'm listening to theirs in order from oldest to newest, so I'm still catching up. This one was from last September, and it was around the time of the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. And I'm actually really glad that I'm listening to it this far away from the time. I've had some time to process and some space from it. But yeah, this episode is called Kava Nope. And Sophie and Annabelle just talk about the Kavanaugh hearings and, you know, their reactions to them. And it was a really great episode, and it felt very full of support and gentleness, which was very nice. This next segment is the witchcraft portion of Witchcraft for the Restless, where I'll talk about one or two spell ingredients every episode. And this time I want to talk to you about the California poppy. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the Latin botanical name, but I'll put that down in the description. This is a plant that I really want to try and grow, and I have tried for two seasons,
and have yet to do so successfully. I can grow other poppies completely fine from seed, but not California's, apparently. To me, this plant feels like a nap in the sun on a nice warm spring day. Like a little bit breezy, but you're definitely like feeling the heat from the sun. Yeah, that's what this feels like. It's a nerve sedative, so it like directly relaxes the nervous system. That means it can reduce pain and ease tension, and it can help you in some sleep. So those are like the actual medicinal properties of this plant. And the plant does have some other medicinal properties, but it is primarily used as a nerve sedative. And this entire plant can be used. So the aerial parts, the flower and stalk and leaves, as well as the seeds and the roots, the whole thing can be used. And when I come up with magical correspondences, I always, always, always refer to its biological needs as well as its medicinal properties and other mundane sort of information like that. It really helps deepen your connection with the plant, and it really helps you understand why those correspondences are there in the first place. So magically, it can be a sedative, of course, and it can sort of help ease tensions in relationships, and it can ease tensions when it comes to like job stress. But since it is a sedative, like it will aid in sleep as well as just relieve tension, I wouldn't use it as the primary ingredient in a like a job stress-related spell, because you don't want to, you know, make your financial situation, like your job situation, go to sleep, generally speaking at least. Yes, you want your job to be less stressful and bring you less stress in your life, but you don't want that tension relief to come in the form of no job. This is why you always should be mindful of like all the properties of the plant you're using, and not just, you know, it eases tension, so that's all you're going to focus on. You also need to keep in the back of your mind any contraindications or side effects that that plant has too. And since this is such a seasonal plant, you can use it to celebrate the changing of the seasons. If you have any like springtime seasonal holidays that you celebrate, you can really incorporate those into your rituals to connect back to the seasons and to honor the passing of seasons or welcoming a new one. It also can be really great at calming and soothing the spirit. So if you're feeling pulled in a million different directions and you just don't feel peaceful within your mind and body, this can sort of help calm your anxieties and help your spirit feel more at peace. And of course, all of this information is strictly for use as a spell ingredient. And you shouldn't be ingesting herbs or using them topically if you don't have experience using them. And by experience with this herb, I mean this herb specifically, because there are medicinal interactions and there are precautions to take and correct ways of using and taking this herb medicinally. But if you're just using it as a spell ingredient, something that you're not going to be ingesting or putting on your body, then go for it. Unlike most poppies, it doesn't have any toxicity, so there's no worry of that. So if you're in California and you see these poppies growing, you can thank them for bringing you some peace and bringing you some calm, and you can invite that energy into your own life. And now for the restless portion of the Witchcraft for the Restless. In this segment, I'll talk about whatever interest or hobby I seem to be working on that episode. Right now, I am in the middle of crocheting myself another tarot mat. I crocheted myself a tarot mat for the springtime, and I did that last year. So I used that one springtime tarot mat for a whole year. And I think that I want to make a seasonal-themed sort of set of tarot mats for myself. And the one that I'm currently working on is deep blues and purples and a little bit of black and all that good stuff. So I think that this is going to be the winter mat, probably. And so yeah, I'm definitely still in a crocheting bit of my interest cycle. And this crocheted tarot mat is turning out quite nicely. If you'd like to see some pictures, I'll post those on my Instagram and on my blog and probably in the show notes as well. And now for the last recurring segment of this episode, it's time for our tarot reading. This will be a general reading for all of you who are listening. And I'm going to be using the Shadowscapes tarot deck. And we're going to explore and find out how we can achieve our goals. So I suggest that you pick a goal that this could refer to. I suggest that you hold that in your mind while I'm shuffling. And I fully realize that this isn't live, this isn't in real time. But I do believe that time is not linear, and whatever energy you are giving this reading right now in your current time, it will definitely find its way to the deck. So hold your goal in your mind, and this reading is going to give us some advice about how to reach those goals. I think I will do two cards, unless the deck feels otherwise. The first card will be action steps that we can take to get closer to this goal. Oh, Three of Wands reversed. Interesting. Okay. And the second card will be what we can avoid and let go of to attain those goals. And for that, we got the Six of Cups. Okay, so what we can do and action steps we can take to attain those goals. In this deck, the Three of Wands, I'll describe the card for you. There is a cliff, a very thin cliff ledge that this woman has walked to the end of, and she's way up high above a river and a canyon. And the Three Wands look as though maybe other travelers have placed them there when they got to the top of this very thin, doesn't look very secure, cliff ledge. But she is looking out. She, instead of turning back, this doesn't look like the end of her, where she wants to go. She's looking out into the sky at the end of this ledge. So she's made this long trek, this long journey, to see what was at the top of this bridge. But what's next? She's thinking that she can't step out off that ledge. There's also a little cat beside her, which I think is nice. She has a little companion on her journey. So yeah, this person wants to continue on their journey. They didn't come this far just to turn back. And they can see forever. They can see so long. You can see all the way to the horizon, and everything is so clear in this card. And to me, the Three of Wands talks about not turning back even when you think you're at the end of your journey. Like, she's at the ledge. She thinks that this is it. But who knows? She can build more of this bridge if she wants. It looks like this ledge could, you know, be a bridge of some sort. And she doesn't have to just turn back just because she can't see more bridge beneath her feet. So I think that you should be confident in yourself and look back and realize how far you've come in order to reach this goal. You've come quite a long way already, even if it's just getting started. Getting started is the longest, most arduous, tedious part of any goal. So realize all the good that you've done towards your goal up to this point, and know that it's not the end. Like, even if you can't physically see that bridge beneath your feet, who knows, maybe you can step out off that ledge and fly. And in its reversed state, I think that this card is reminding us to be mindful of how strong we're building this bridge for ourselves. Are we leaving it strong enough for others to follow in our footsteps? This ledge that this woman is standing on is very thin, and those who came before her to build this bridge really didn't make it safe for her to be there. So be mindful that the steps you're taking towards your goal aren't building a rickety bridge. Build yourself a really strong foundation, and that way when you reach the top, like when you reach your goal, it won't just all come crumbling down beneath your feet. And then we have the Six of Cups for what to avoid and what to let go of. This card is so gorgeous. I love this one. There's a stream with fish in it, but there's also fish who are swimming above the stream. The fish aren't confined to just being in the water. And then it looks like a youngish child who has a tea party with her stuffed animals, and it looks like there's some fairies that came along to join in. This really is like a childlike card for me. And I think this card is letting us know that we can let go of the seriousness of adult life sometimes. We can sort of let go of our concept of reality, and if we do, we can change our reality. And it could be good to let go of your idea of who's going to show up to your party, of who's going to be in your life. Maybe open yourself up to some more possibilities in that area. This little girl just brought her stuffed animals with her, and she didn't know that the fairies were going to join her in this tea party. But she serves them and welcomes them just the same. So I think this card is letting us know that holding on to our strict adult ideas of what reality is isn't useful, and it's not as fun, and maybe we need to have some more childlike wonder and imagination in our lives. That reading definitely felt useful and applicable to my life, and I hope it felt aligned and really in tune for you as well. So in closing, I'd just like to thank you for listening. This is getting to be a little bit long. Who knows how long it'll be once I edit it down, but Thank you so much for listening this far. You can find my blog on Tumblr at The Restless Witch and Instagram at The Restless Witch. And you can find me on Twitter at Restless_Witch. And if you like this podcast, if you'd like to see more of them, please support me on Patreon at The Restless Witch. And if you'd like to support me in other ways other than monthly, you can donate to the show at Ko-fi and paypal.me/TheRestlessWitch. And I'll put all of those links down in the description. It would mean so much to me to have your support. And I have some pretty cool perks in my Patreon as well. You can also book tarot readings with me through my blog. And I also sell custom crocheted items like tarot mats and tarot bags and plushies and wearable items. So please contact me through my blog if you'd like to get a hold of any of those. So now that all that self-promotion is over, the opening and closing music is Apple Spell by My Bubba and Me from the album How It's Done in Italy. Thank you again so much for listening. Stay tuned for the next episode, and I'll see you next time. Bye.